Good morning. Today is Tuesday, February the 9th. Joining us this morning from points undisclosed, REDEC Executive Director Greg Foster. Good morning, sir.
Beautiful Ferndale, California.
Oh, I see. Well, so much for that intrigue.
Yeah. There's no mystery here.
Yeah, well, not for that purpose, huh?
No, not at all.
All right. Are you ready for our Ever Wonder Why?
Sure.
Ever wonder why the color red angers a bull?
Wow, that's a good question. I'm trying to think of whether or not bulls are colorblind, so maybe it stands out from the other colors more than, I have no idea.
Well, you were starting to get semi-close to something there. Actually, the color red doesn't anger a bull, since bulls are colorblind. And they can't tell red from any other color. In a bullfight, it's the movement of the bullfighter's cape that makes the bull charge, not its color. This is why the bullfighter has taken to shake his cape to make the bull charge. The idea that the color red angers a bull came from the custom in Spain of using red bullfighter capes. But this color was chosen to excite the spectators, not the bull. The color red has always had an exciting effect on humans, often causing an increase in blood pressure, a quickened pulse rate, and heightened anxiety. It's been suggested that this reaction to red may be due to its being the color of blood, which probably is also a reason why you don't find too many restaurants with red on the aprons, right?
Yeah.
Wrong.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'll get you excited. You want to eat.
That's right. Spaghetti sauce for everyone.
Exactly. Rare steaks.
Yeah. Well, I've been hearing the last little bit more and more discussion about the new cable line or fiber optic line that's coming in from Asia. How big, physically big is that thing? Is it a foot? Is it 10 feet wide? How big is this?
I have to tell you, I have no idea. I can tell you that, you know, when we did the fiber optic line, which is smaller, going west on Highway 36, that was, you know, tiny. I mean, it was smaller than your pinky finger in terms of diameter. And the size of those things are, you know, really dependent upon the number of strands in the fiber, right? So the fiber optic line, at least the one we did on 36, was made up of these tiny little glass fiber strands, you know, fiber optic, right? And it's called optic because it uses light to pass through these things. And so, you know, the more strands you put in, the bigger that'll be around. So I don't know, and I don't know if you've shared much about the technical aspects of the cable yet. How many strands. I assume if you're going under the ocean, you're going to have a fair amount of protection around it as well. But, you know, I don't think it's going to be like, you know, you think about giant, cables that hold up bridges. I don't think it's that big. But I really don't know, quite honestly. But it's an exciting project because it's going to have all sorts of spin-off benefits.
Now, is this cable, Greg, being laid on the ocean bed right now, and it's just kind of coming our way, and the question is, how long does it take because of the storms and all that kind of stuff before it gets here, and then the ends get connected, however the ends get connected, and then we see the economic boom associated with that? Or
my understanding is they have to go through the permit process here still, and then they'll start doing it. But I was on a call the other day, and they were talking about kind of, and I can't remember the time. Boy, I wish I studied fiber optics for the show today. But they were talking about how actually relatively quick the thing goes once they start doing it. The most interesting part about it that I didn't think about was they have to put sort of the sunken regeneration station along the way to regenerate and power the cable as it comes across the ocean. So that's kind of exciting as well.
But, so there is,
I mean,
there is something about the distance needing a booster station, if you will.
Exactly. Yeah.
Huh. Are there any, how many of these things are there?
Oh, they're all over. And, you know, they're to the north and to the south of us. What we have is the ability to sort of be in the middle of some of those cable landings to the north and south. And we're particularly good spot to do it. Now, and for a couple of reasons, one of which, of course, is we have a willing, government entity in the Harbor District who is working with them in terms of, the logistics of landing it here. But we also have other companies who are, talking about and moving forward with building a fiber optic line that would come over the Highway 299 corridor, not exactly along the highway, but off and on through that way. And so that would connect it then to the rest of the network. And of course, that just spins off all sorts of other folks. Anyone who needs big, good broadband would be able to access that. So we're pretty excited about it. Connie Stewart is working really hard. She's been tasked with assisting this by Humboldt State University. And there's a company called Vero Networks that's looking at doing that other project across 299. And it's a significant investment, but all of it and being driven by the private sector, which is always sort of implies good benefit, at least in the business side. And what's important too is there'll be what we call on ramps, basically a way for people to access that line.
Is this thing, Greg, that what spurred the development in Seattle and the Silicon Valley of one of these lines? I mean, is that kind of what we have the chance to be?
Well, it's almost the other way around, right? I mean, I think when we saw the real development of Silicon Valley, it was, early on in the computer age. It really was driven by Stanford University, and up in Seattle was Microsoft. But a lot of those were being built pre-internet. But what, it certainly has accelerated supported businesses since then. Those places were already sort of tech hubs. The growth of the internet and broadband, combined with the existing infrastructure and brain power.
It's a little bit different then at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster. Greg, one of the things that I think goes hand in hand with this new opportunity is for the community to, I hate to use the phrase because it seems like it's so rare anymore, but to act normal. Here's some folks coming into the area. Certainly there's going to be an economic benefit associated with this in a whole bunch of different levels. And I'm already hearing that there are some storm clouds gathering from the naysayers and people who are not in favor of it. Is that
right, fair?
Is it very, very vocal, small minority of group? What is going on out there?
Well, I think part of it is, people are naturally cautious, I think. And so, there isn't a whole lot of information out there about what this is just yet and what it means for us. And so I think that, when there's a vacuum of information, sometimes people will fill in with their own interpretations. And if you come from a place of like fear or protection, then you'll take an oppositional viewpoint. And so I'm hopeful that we can have more open discussions at some point about what this really means. There will be a permitting process, and there will be some other public processes when they're ready, that a lot more will be learned about what's going on here with this project and other projects, quite honestly. So there has been some concern expressed about, does it interfere with the fishing out there and other things like that. I mean, you do have some who are, quite honestly, you just can't convince, who are, you know, conspiracy theorists or, you know, talking about, you know, crazy ideas about 5G and some of this other stuff. You're never going to convince them. There may be some folks out there who have some, you know, what I would term, I guess, legitimate concerns. So there may be an impact. And in that case, you know, you talk to them and figure out how to make it work. What we do need to be careful of, I think, when we're talking about projects like this, is making sure that we don't, you know, throw out the baby with the bathwater. In other words, if this has a huge community economic impact, we need to be aware of that and know that, you know, projects like this can really benefit a lot of different folks, create a lot more access to economic opportunity, and balance that against whatever, you know, the impacts might be, and make sure that you know, the community is truly benefiting. And that includes, quite honestly, working with the companies to make sure that they design their networks in such a way that the community can access them and make sure that, that, you know, they don't just pass through the community. In other words, you know, you could build this thing that just goes from, I don't know, I'm just thinking, Singapore to Chicago. Those are, you know, they'll serve that. So that's why I heard that one again. So that's why I said that. I'm not exactly sure where they're going. But, you know, that could pass right through. It'd be like a big freeway with no on-ramps. Well, that doesn't benefit us. So we have to make sure that, you know, if they're passing through and you know, providing either, you know, financial support or this political support, that there's some benefit that accrues to the community. And, you know, from everything I'm hearing, they're completely on board with that, the company.
Well, yeah, I would think that this has a chance really to do some magic here, you know. Then and the arguments that what we used to hear was environmental damage, clean development, all that kind of stuff. This thing has got to be as clean as it possibly could be, so that really negates all of those arguments that have historically been used in opposition to development in our area. Well, historically, in the last 75 years.
Well, and we've been deploying fiber all through the community for years and years and years. And, you know, in the last 20 years, we've built two fiber optic lines that have gone from Humboldt outside of the area. And I defy anyone to go even find out where they are and in terms of environmental impact. One is, you know, partly buried and partly above ground going north and south. The other one is then going east and west. And,
well, you know, if you want to have somebody find it, give them a backhoe. That seems to be able to find these things.
Exactly. And that's the only way when people really start complaining about it is when something like that happens. It's not that they complain when it's there. They complain when it's not there. And because everybody is really so reliant upon broadband technology. And I think about just in the last year with COVID and, you know, having good broadband was absolutely necessary for kids to get to school and educated. And unfortunately, there are big segments of this community who just don't have that. I mean, it's kind of exciting that recently the Hoopa tribe got a funding from the state to build a fiber network within the tribal, you know, square up there at the reservation. And that's going to allow fiber to get to the homes up there. And I think that's just great because, you know, they're so remote. They don't have access to all the resources, but the tribe and others worked hard to get that funding to put that network together. And that's going to benefit the businesses and the kids up there, which is really important.
So is there anything at this point that the general citizen can do to help facilitate or to kind of encourage this project?
I think you know, in general, I think the more people educate themselves just on the topic in general, then they know when the time comes, when the public meetings and the permitting and all that comes on, they can sort of separate the wheat from the chaff, right? You can hear which arguments are valid and which arguments may not be. And I, you know, sometimes it's kind of distressing when people either supporting or opposing a project come in and, you know, testify with stuff that just... Is it right? Or is
just
it true,
get involved a little bit then. Yeah.
Exactly. So there's plenty of information out there about Trans-Pacific Fiber and all that good stuff.
It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster, live and direct from his sequestered location in, I don't want to say basement, because a basement in Ferndale makes you really sound stupid, huh?
Yeah, there you go. Okay,
yeah, from underneath the house.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Any update with the airport project with the solar panels and that stuff? Is that continuing to go ahead, or is that kind of been waylaid with challenges of getting materials?
I think that's moving forward. That's pretty exciting. I know they're working on their master plan up there too. That's pretty exciting for development. And in fact, I just signed a contract last night with a consultant who's going to do some work with us on basically putting together our pitch package again for going out and recruiting new service. You know, obviously we've been on hold for that for a while, but we are seeing, you know, new service announcements. The airlines are looking down the road. So we do what's called a leakage study, but really it's a market study, and we'll do a really in-depth market study of how 2019 went, which was our sort of last normal year. And we developed these pro formas on different service types and destinations. And then we'll be going out and talking to the airlines about that again. So we're pretty excited about that.
Is that an annual report, Greg, that has to be done, or study?
We do it. The last one we did was for the year 2016. And what we do is we don't do it annually, but we do it when the time is right. So we did the one in 2016 because we had just gone to San Francisco only. We knew we were losing a lot of traffic to other airports as a result. And so the time was right really to go out and pitch new service. And so we did that study. And what we can see from the data, this is air ticket data, is you can see who lives in our market area who's actually flying from other airports, and you can see where they're flying to. Now, I'm not talking about the individual, so we can take that. And so in 2015, we did it, and we knew this, we knew this intuitively, but we wanted the market data to show it. We knew that a lot of people were driving to San Francisco and flying to Southern California, and so when we did that study, we found out that 28, we were losing half of the people that were flying that were from Humboldt County were flying from other airports. And of that, about half, it was 28% of all flyers were flying from San Francisco. And then we could look and see how many were flying from the Los Angeles airports, not just LAX, Southern California. We were then able to say, okay, here's how many they're flying, here's how much they're paying, how far they're driving and all that. We put that in a pro forma that shows what we expect the service to do. And then we go to the airline and say, here's our pitch to you. If you do this, we believe you'll make money. Here's all the data that this is. And in that case, United said, okay, let's do it. And so that's really what spurred the LAX service.
Is there
a similar thing with Denver?
Yeah, that's why I was going to ask, when we get out of this and then with the fiber optics, I would suggest that having the airport is even going to be more critical, not to San Francisco, but those LA flights and the Denver flights to get out of here and not have the goofiness at SFO.
I think there's a few things working in our favor. One of which, in the conversation we had, probably 7-8 months ago when we were talking to United, is they are looking at suburban regional airports as fiber optic, nor the aquaculture and other businesses that are growing here that we put in the business case. And I think that's an important piece. They always ask me, what's happening with the business climate? You know, our business is growing. Are there larger companies? You know, we provide them a whole economic data part of this package. And then, as we get through the pandemic, obviously they're going to be looking at building service again, and we want to get to the front of the line to get some of that.
So
up until the end of February, the services to Denver, LA, and San Francisco were all doing very well. So they know that it wasn't like we're not operating in a vacuum of information. We have good data to show that they were making good money here.
So why do you need the study then?
Well, because you always want to do that update, right? You want to show the hard data. It's been 5 years. I mean, they've got some, but we don't just show it to United, obviously. We show it to other airlines as well. We're pitching to North, we're pitching everywhere else. But, you know, the way the airline industry works, our network planners within the airline, whether it be United or anywhere else, there's a competition going on outside the airline, which is all of us little airports doing this very same thing, which is making the business case. But there's also a competition going on within the airlines, which is these folks who are in charge of various regions. You know, they make their business case based on what we provide them and their own research to their upper management to make the investment to come in here. And so there's competition within the airline, and we want to give our network planner the best.
Oh, okay. So it's like district managers then doing battle against each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And because there's a limited amount of equipment and limited amount of money and only so much crew to go around. And
right,
so,
right.
So we really work hard. They said to have, you know, there was an article a few years ago that United was talking, and it was in the Chicago Business Times, I think, and they were talking about every 10 to 20 airports they actually deeply study, only one gets a service. So there's a lot of competition out there. You really have to make sure you have the best case for it.
That makes sense. KINS, News and Information Time is 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster. Greg, the situation with the restaurants, I know you work with a number of them. We're hearing that maybe the shakeout has happened. Maybe it hasn't happened. How long can they hold on? What are you hearing from your folks in the field?
Well, it's tough. You know, obviously it's tough. And so employment is down. We have a lot of owners who are, owner, operator, dishwasher, whatever else, what they're doing, they had to lay off a lot of staff. But the community's been really great on, there's outdoor dining, some of the restaurants are doing, which is great. The takeout is good. We did a program, that Humboldt made in the Chambers, and some others really took a lead on, Dine Out Eureka in January. It's not easy. But I think that, for the most part, the shakeout has occurred. I do my part, as a good citizen. Plus, I don't want to cook sometimes.
Yeah.
Go out and get something to go and buy from, one of our local restaurants. Because I think it's really important that we keep doing that and support them. Because, we don't want to lose them, obviously. There's so much of the quality of the community is the ability to go out. And I really do miss personally going in and sitting down and having a nice meal in the restaurant. And I know that by, going in and getting takeout and eating at home or eating outside is a way that I can preserve that going forward. These folks are working really hard. We have not, in our portfolio, we have a number of restaurants. We haven't lost any permanently yet. Again, they're significantly downscaled in some level in terms of, wait staff and all that. But people are going and buying. And I've had some dinners outside where, I thought I'd never be eating outside in the rain in the winter in Humboldt. But, you know, you got a heater on, you leave your coat on. It's actually kind of nice in a way, you know. You're under a tent. I don't mind it at all. It's kind of fun in a way.
Well, that's why I was saying how fortunate we've been to have the weather that we've had for the last 12 months.
Mild, you know.
Yeah, that helps it out.
So, but, you know, if we want to preserve those kind of businesses, it's really up to us to do it. And that means, you know, going out and getting that to-go meal and maybe tipping a little more for the wait staff who are, you know, really struggling.
Yeah, do what you can when you can. I mean, that's kind of the bottom line.
If you have the ability to give, now it's time to do it. Yeah.
Okay, so you got 30 seconds. You mentioned your portfolio is doing pretty good.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of big loans lately, which are really exciting. And the biggest one, most recently, the one I'm really excited about, is the new Taylor factory retail spot that will be down in Old Town. We're doing that with Redwood Capital Bank and Arcadia.
Are they going into the old? Where are they going in? The old co-op?
Building on Waterfront Drive that's been the historic building that was a co-op for a while.
Yeah, okay, the big green building.
It's kind of a yellow color. It's on Waterfront Drive. It's been an opera house in the past. Anyway, if you go on Waterfront, you'll see the big Pearson Builder sign on it right now.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
It's a fantastic project. Yeah.
Very cool. Good news to end it on, too. Appreciate your time this morning, bud.
Great company. Yep, thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Bye-bye.